upon the battlefield and among the ashes. But there's little hope there. The horsemen of Rohan did their work too well. For some time the companions crawled and groped upon the ground. The tree stood mournfully above them, its dry leaves now hanging limp and rattling in the chill easterly wind. Aragorn moved slowly away. He came to the ashes of the watchfire near the river bank, and then began to retrace the ground back towards the knoll where the battle had been fought. Suddenly he stooped and bent low with his face almost in the grass. Then he called to the others. They came running up.
"Here at last we find news," said Aragorn.
He lifted up a broken leaf for them to see, a large pale leaf of golden hue, now fading and turning brown.
"Here is a Malorn leaf of Lorien, and there are small crumbs on it, and a few more crumbs in the grass. And see, there are some pieces of cut cord lying nearby."
"And here is the knife that cut them," said Gimli.
He stooped and drew out of a tussock, into which some heavy foot had trampled it, a short, jagged blade. The haft from which it had been snapped was beside it.
"It is an orc weapon," he said, holding it gingerly, and looking with disgust at the carved handle.
It had been shaped like a hideous head with squinting eyes and leering mouth.
"Well, here is the strangest riddle that we've yet found," exclaimed Legolas. "A bound prisoner escapes both from the orcs and from the surrounding horsemen. He then stops, while still in the open, and cuts his bonds with an orc knife. But how and why? For if his legs were tied, how did he walk? And if his arms were tied, how did he use the knife? And if neither were tied, why did he cut the cords at all? Being pleased with his skill, he then sat down and quietly ate some whey bread. That at least is enough to show that he was a hobbit, without the Malorn leaf. After that, I suppose, he turned his arms into wings and flew away singing into the trees. It should be easy to find him. We only need wings ourselves."
"There was sorcery here right enough," said Gimli. "What was that old man doing? What have you to say, Aragorn, to the reading of Legolas? Can you better it?"
"Maybe I could," said Aragorn, smiling. "There are some other signs near at hand that you have not considered. I agree that the prisoner was a hobbit, and must have had either legs or hands free before he came here. I guess that it was hands, because the riddle then becomes easier, and also because, as I read the marks, he was carried to this point by an orc. Blood was spilled there, a few paces away, orc blood. There are deep prints of hooves all about this spot, and signs that a heavy thing was dragged away. The orc was slain by horsemen, and later his body was hauled to the fire. But the hobbit was not seen. He was not in the open, for it was night, and he still had his elven cloak. He was exhausted and hungry, and it's not to be wondered at, that when he had cut his bonds with the knife of his fallen enemy, he rested and ate a little before he crept away. But it's a comfort to know that he had some lembas in his pocket, even though he ran away without gear or pack. That, perhaps, is like a hobbit. I say he, though I hope and guess that both Merry and Pippin were here together. There is, however, nothing to show that for certain."
"And how do you suppose that either of our friends came to have a hand free?" asked Gimli.
"I don't know how it happened," answered Aragorn. "Nor do I know why an orc was carrying them away. Not to help them to escape, we may be sure. Nay, rather I think that I now begin to understand a matter that has puzzled me from the beginning. Why, when Boromir had fallen, were the orcs content with the capture of Merry and Pippin?
They didn't seek out the rest of us, nor attack our camp. But instead they went with all speed towards Isengard. Did they suppose that they had captured the ring-bearer and his faithful comrades? I think not. Their masters would not dare to give such plain orders to orcs, even if they knew so much themselves. They would not speak openly to them of the ring. They are not trusty servants. But I think the orcs had been commanded to capture hobbits alive at all costs.
An attempt was made to slip out with the precious prisoners before the battle. Treachery, perhaps, likely enough with some folk. Some large and bold orc may have been trying to escape with the prize alone, for his own ends. There, that's my tale. Others might be devised, but on this we may count in any case. One at least of our friends escaped. It's our task to find him and help him before we return to Rohan. We must not be daunted by Fangorn, since need drove him into that dark place.
I don't know which taunts me more, Fangorn, or the thought of the long road through Rohan on foot, said Gimli.
Then let us go to the forest, said Aragorn. It wasn't long before Aragorn found fresh signs. At one point, near the bank of the Entwash, he came upon footprints, hobbit prints, but too light for much to be made of them. Then again, beneath the bole of a great tree on the very edge of the wood, more prints were discovered. The earth was bare and dry, and didn't reveal much.
One hobbit at least stood here for a while and looked back, and then it turned away into the forest, said Aragorn. Then we must go in too, said Gimli. But I don't like the look of this, Fangorn, and we were warned against it. I wish the chase had led anywhere else.
I don't think the wood feels evil, whatever tales may say, said Legolas. He stood under the eaves of the forest, stooping forward, as if he were listening, and peering with wide eyes into the shadows. No, it's not evil. Or what evil is in it is far away. I catch only the faintest echoes of dark places where the hearts of the trees are black. There is no malice near us, but there is watchfulness and anger.
Well, it has no cause to be angry with me, said Gimli. I've done it no harm.
That's just as well, said Legolas. But nonetheless, it has suffered harm. There is something happening inside, or going to happen. Do you not feel the tenseness? It takes my breath.
I feel the air is stuffy, said the dwarf. This wood is lighter than Mirkwood, but it's musty and shabby.
It's old, very old, said the elf.
So old that almost I feel young again, as I have not felt since I journeyed with you children.
It's old and full of memory. I could have been happy here if I'd come in days of peace.
I dare say you could, snorted Gimli. You're a wood elf. Anyway, though elves of any kind are strange folk, yet you comfort me. Where you go, I'll go. But keep your bow ready to hand, and I'll keep my axe loose in my belt. Not for use on trees, he added hastily, looking up at the tree under which they stood. I don't wish to meet that old man at unawares without an argument ready to hand. That's all. Let's go.
With that, the three hunters plunged into the forest of Fangorn. Legolas and Gimli left the tracking to Aragorn. There was little for him to see. The floor of the forest was dry and covered with a drift of leaves, but guessing that the fugitives would stay near the water, he returned often to the banks of the stream. So it was that he came upon the place where Merry and Pippin had drunk and bathed their feet. There, plain for all to see, were the footprints of two hobbits, one somewhat smaller than the other.
"This is good tidings," said Aragorn. "Yet the marks are 2 days old, and it seems that at this point the hobbits left the waterside." "Then what should we do now?" said Gimli. We can't pursue them through the whole fastness of Fangorn. We've come ill-supplied. If we don't find them soon, we shall be of no use to them, except to sit down beside them and show our friendship by starving together.
If that's indeed all we can do, then we must do it, said Aragorn. Let us go on. They came at length to the steep, abrupt end of Treebeard's Hill, and looked up at the rock wall with its rough steps leading to the high shelf. Gleams of sun were striking through the hurrying clouds, and the forest now looked less grey and drear. "Let us go up and look about us," said Legolas. "I still feel my breath short." The companions climbed up. Aragorn came last, moving slowly. He was scanning the steps and ledges closely.
"I'm almost sure that the hobbits have been up here," he said. "But there are other marks, very strange marks, which I don't understand. I wonder if we can see anything from this ledge which will help us to guess which way they went next.
He stood up and looked about, but he saw nothing that was of any use. The shelf faced southward and eastward, but only on the east was the view open. There he could see the heads of the trees descending in ranks towards the plain from which they had come.
"We've journeyed a long way round," said Legolas. "We could have all come here safe together if we'd left the great river on the second or third day and struck west. Few can foresee whither their road will lead them till they come to its end."
"But we didn't wish to come to Fangorn," said Gimli.
"Yet here we are, and nicely caught in the net," said Legolas. "Look."
"Look at what?" said Gimli.
"There in the trees."
"Where? I've not elf eyes."
"Hush, speak more softly. Look," said Legolas, pointing, "down in the wood, back in the way that we've just come.
It is he. Cannot you see him, passing from tree to tree?" I see him now," hissed Gimli. "Look, Aragorn, did I not warn you? There's the old man, all in dirty grey rags. That's why I couldn't see him at first."
Aragorn looked and beheld a bent figure moving slowly. It wasn't far away. It looked like an old beggar man, walking wearily, leaning on a rough staff. His head was bowed, and he didn't look towards them. In other lands they would have greeted him with kind words, but now they stood silent, each feeling a strange expectancy. Something was approaching that held a hidden power, or menace. Gimli gazed with wide eyes for a while, as step by step the figure drew nearer. Then suddenly, unable to contain himself longer, he burst out,
"Your bow, Legolas, bend it, get ready, it's Saruman. Do not let him speak or put a spell upon us. Shoot first."
Legolas took his bow and bent it, slowly and as if some other will resisted him. He held an arrow loosely in his hand, but did not fit it to the string. Aragorn stood silent. His face was watchful and intent.
"Why are you waiting? What's the matter with you?"
said Gimli in a hissing whisper.
"Legolas is right," said Aragorn quietly. "We may not shoot an old man so, at unawares and unchallenged. Whatever fear or doubt be on us, watch and wait."
At that moment the old man quickened his pace and came with surprising speed to the foot of the rock wall. Then suddenly he looked up, while they stood motionless looking down. There was no sound. They couldn't see his face. He was hooded, and above the hood he wore a wide-brimmed hat, so that all his features were overshadowed, except for the end of his nose and his grey beard. Yet it seemed to Aragorn that he caught the gleam of eyes keen and bright from within the shadow of the hooded brows. At last the old man broke the silence.
"Well met indeed, my friends," he said in a soft voice. "I wish to speak to you. Will you come down, or shall I come up?"
Without waiting for an answer, he began to climb.
"Now," said Gimli. "Stop him, Legolas." "Did I not see that I wished to speak to you?" said the old man. "Put away that bow, Master Elf."
The bow and arrow fell from Legolas's hands, and his arms hung loose at his sides.
"And you, Master Dwarf, pray take your hand from your axe-haft till I am up. You will not need such arguments."
Gimli started, and then stood still as stone, staring, while the old man sprang up the rough steps as nimbly as a goat. All weariness seemed to have left him. As he stepped up onto the shelf, there was a gleam, too brief for certainty, a quick glint of white, as if some garment shrouded by the grey rags had been for an instant revealed. The intake of Gimli's breath could be heard as a loud hiss in the silence.
"Well met, I say again," said the old man, coming towards them.
When he was a few feet away, he stood, stooping over his staff, with his head thrust forward, peering at them from under his hood.
"And what may you be doing in these parts? An elf, a man, and a dwarf, all clad in elvish fashion? No doubt there's a tale worth hearing behind it all. Such things are not often seen here."
"You speak as one who knows Fangorn well," said Aragorn. "Is that so?"
"Not well," said the old man. That would be the study of many lives, but I come here now and again.
May we know your name, and then hear what it is that you have to say to us, said Aragorn. The morning passes, and we have an errand that will not wait.
As for what I wished to say, I've said it. What may you be doing, and what tale can you tell of yourselves? As for my name...
He broke off, laughing long and softly. Aragorn felt a shudder run through him at the sound, a strange cold thrill, and yet it was not fear or terror that he felt. Rather it was like the sudden bite of a keen air, or the slap of cold rain that wakes up an uneasy sleeper.
"My name," said the old man again, "have you not guessed it already? You've heard it before, I think. Yes, you've heard it before. But come now, what of your tale?"
The three companions stood silent and made no answer.
"There are some who'd begin to doubt whether your errand is fit to tell," said the old man. "Happily, I know something of it. You are tracking the footsteps of two young hobbits, I believe. Yes, hobbits. Don't stare, as if you'd never heard the strange name before. You have, and so have I. Well, they climbed up here the day before yesterday, and they met someone they didn't expect. Does that comfort you? And now you'd like to know where they were taken? Well, well, maybe I can give you some news about that. But why are we standing? Your errand, you see, is no longer as urgent as you thought. Let us sit down and be more at ease."
The old man turned away and went towards a heap of fallen stones and rock at the foot of the cliff behind. Immediately, as if a spell had been removed, the others relaxed and stirred. Gimli's hand went at once to his axe-haft. Aragorn drew his sword. Legolas picked up his bow. The old man took no notice, but stooped and sat himself on a low flat stone. Then his grey cloak drew apart, and they saw, beyond a doubt, that he was clothed beneath, all in white.
"Saruman!" cried Gimli, springing towards him with axe in hand. "Speak! Tell us where you've hidden our friends. What have you done with them? Speak, or I will make a dint in your hat that even a wizard will find it hard to deal with."
The old man was too quick for him. He sprang to his feet and leapt to the top of a large rock. There he stood, grown suddenly tall, towering above them. His hood and his grey rags were flung away. His white garments shone. He lifted up his staff, and Gimli's axe leapt from his grasp and fell ringing on the ground. The sword of Aragorn, stiff in his motionless hand, blazed with a sudden fire. Legolas gave a great shout and shot an arrow high in the air. It vanished in a flash of flame. "Mithrandir!" he cried. "Mithrandir!"
"Well met, I say to you again, Legolas," said the old man.
They all gazed at him. His hair was white as snow in the sunshine, and gleaming white was his robe. His eyes under his deep brows were bright, piercing as the rays of the sun. Power was in his hand. Between wonder, joy, and fear they stood and found no words to say. At last Aragorn stirred.
"Gandalf," he said, "beyond all hope you return to us in our need. What veil was over my sight? Gandalf!"
Gimli said nothing, but sank to his knees, shading his eyes.
"Gandalf?"
the old man repeated, as if recalling from old memory a long disused word.
"Yes, that was my name. I was Gandalf."
He stepped down from the rock, and picking up his grey cloak, wrapped it about him. It seemed as if the sun had been shining, but now was hid in cloud again.
"Yes, you may still call me Gandalf," he said.
And the voice was the voice of their old friend and guide.
"Get up, my good Gimli. No blame to you, and no harm done to me. Indeed, my friends, none of you have any weapons that could hurt me. Be merry. We meet again, at the turn of the tide. The great storm is coming, but the tide has turned."
He laid his hand on Gimli's head, and the dwarf looked up and laughed suddenly.
"Gandalf," he said, "but you're all in white."
"Yes, I am white now," said Gandalf. "Indeed I am, Saruman, one might almost say. Saruman, as he should have been. But come now,
Tell me of yourselves. I've passed through fire and deep water since we parted. I've forgotten much that I thought I knew, and learned again much that I had forgotten. I can see many things far off, but many things that are close at hand I cannot see. Tell me of yourselves. What do you wish to know? Said Aragorn. All that has happened since we parted on the bridge would be a long tale. Won't you first give us news of the hobbits? Did you find them, and are they safe? No, I didn't find them, said Gandalf. There was a darkness over the valleys of the Emyn Muil, but I did not know of their captivity until the eagle told me.
The eagle, said Legolas. I've seen an eagle high and far off. The last time was 3 days ago, above the Emyn Muil.
Yes, said Gandalf. That was Gwaihir the Windlord, who rescued me from Orthanc. I sent him before me to watch the river and gather tidings. His sight is keen, but he can't see all that passes under hill and tree. Some things he has seen, and others I've seen myself. The ring now is passed beyond my help, or the help of any of the company that set out from Rivendell. Very nearly it was revealed to the enemy, but it escaped. I had some part in that, for I sat in a high place, and I strove with the dark tower, and the shadow passed. Then I was weary, very weary, and I walked long in dark thought.
Then you know about Frodo, said Gimli. How do things go with him?
I can't say. He was saved from a great peril, but many lie before him still. He resolved to go alone to Mordor, and he set out. That is all that I can say.
Not alone, said Legolas. We think that Sam went with him.
Did he?
Said Gandalf, and there was a gleam in his eye and a smile on his face.
Did he indeed? It is news to me, yet it doesn't surprise me. Good, very good. You lighten my heart. You must tell me more. Now sit by me and tell me the tale of your journey.
The companion sat on the ground at his feet, and Aragorn took up the tale. For a long while Gandalf said nothing, and he asked no questions. His hands were spread upon his knees, and his eyes were closed. At last, when Aragorn spoke of the death of Boromir, and of his last journey upon the great river, the old man sighed.
"You have not said all that you know or guess, Aragorn, my friend," he said quietly. "Poor Boromir. I couldn't see what happened to him. It was a sore trial for such a man, a warrior and a lord of men. Galadriel told me that he was in peril, but he escaped in the end. I am glad. It was not in vain that the young hobbits came with us, if only for Boromir's sake. But that's not the only part they have to play. They were brought to Fangorn, and their coming was like the falling of small stones that starts an avalanche in the mountains. Even as we talk here, I hear the first rumblings. Saruman had best not be caught away from home when the dam bursts.
In one thing you've not changed, my dear friend, said Aragorn. You still speak in riddles.
What, in riddles? Said Gandalf. No, for I was talking aloud to myself, a habit of the old. They choose the wisest person present to speak to. The long explanations needed by the young are wearying.
He laughed, but the sound now seemed warm and kindly as a gleam of sunshine. "I'm no longer young, even in the reckoning of men of the ancient houses," said Aragorn. "Won't you open your mind more clearly to me?"
"What, then, should I say?"
said Gandalf, and paused for a while in thought.
"This, in brief, is how I see things at the moment, if you wish to have a piece of my mind as plain as possible. The enemy, of course, has long known that the ring is abroad, and that it's borne by a hobbit. He knows now the number of our company that set out from Rivendell, and the kind of each of us. But he doesn't yet perceive our purpose clearly. He supposes that we were all going to Minas Tirith, for that is what he would himself have done in our place. And according to his wisdom, it would have been a heavy stroke against his power. Indeed, he's in great fear, not knowing what mighty one may suddenly appear, wielding the ring, and assailing him with war, seeking to cast him down and take his place. That we should wish to cast him down, and have no one in his place, is not a thought that occurs to his mind. That we should try to destroy the ring itself has not yet entered into his darkest dream, in which, no doubt, you will see our good fortune and our hopes. For imagining war, he has let loose war, believing that he has no time to waste, for he that strikes the first blow, if he strikes it hard enough, may need to strike no more. So the forces that he has long been preparing he is now setting in motion, sooner than he intended. Wise fool! For if he had used all his power to guard Mordor, so that none could enter, and bent all his guile to the hunting of the ring, then indeed hope would have faded. Neither ring nor bearer could long have eluded him. But now his eye gazes abroad rather than near at home, and mostly he looks towards Minas Tirith. Very soon now his strength will fall upon it like a storm. For already he knows that the messengers that he sent to waylay the company have failed again. They have not found the ring, neither have they brought away any hobbits as hostages. Had they done even so much as that, it would have been a heavy blow to us, and it might have been fatal. But let us not darken our hearts by imagining the trial of their gentle loyalty in the Dark Tower. For the enemy has failed, so far, thanks to Saruman.
"Then is not Saruman a traitor?" said Gimli.
"Indeed, yes," said Gandalf. "Doubly. And is not that strange? Nothing that we have endured of late has seemed so grievous as the treason of Isengard. Even reckoned as a lord and captain, Saruman has grown very strong. He threatens the men of Rohan, and draws off their help from Minas Tirith, even as the main blow is approaching from the east. Yet a treacherous weapon is ever a danger to the hand. Saruman also had a mind to capture the ring, for himself, or at least to snare some hobbits for his evil purposes. So between them, our enemies have contrived only to bring Merry and Pippin with marvellous speed, and in the nick of time, to Fangorn, where otherwise they would never have come at all. Also they have filled themselves with new doubts that disturb their plans. No tidings of the battle will come to Mordor, thanks to the horsemen of Rohan, but the Dark Lord knows that two hobbits were taken in the Emyn Muil, and borne away towards Isengard against the will of his own servants. He now has Isengard to fear, as well as Minas Tirith. If Minas Tirith falls, it will go ill with Saruman.
It is a pity that our friends lie in between, said Gimli. If no land divided Isengard and Mordor, then they could fight while we watched and waited.
The victory would emerge stronger than either, and free from doubt, said Gandalf.
But Isengard cannot fight Mordor, unless Saruman first obtains the ring. That he will never do now. He doesn't yet know his peril. There's much that he doesn't know. He was so eager to lay his hands on his prey that he couldn't wait at home, and he came forth to meet and to spy on his messengers. But he came too late, for once, and the battle was over and beyond his help before he reached these parts. He did not remain here long. I look into his mind and I see his doubt. He has no woodcraft. He believes that the horsemen slew and burned all upon the field of battle, but he doesn't know whether the orcs were bringing any prisoners or not. And he doesn't know of the quarrel between his servants and the orcs of Mordor, nor does he know of the winged messenger.
The winged messenger? Cried Legolas. I shot at him with the bow of Galadriel above San Geber, and I felled him from the sky. He filled us all with fear. What new terror is this?
One that you cannot slay with arrows, said Gandalf. You only slew his steed. It was a good deed, but the rider was soon horsed again, for he was a Nazgul, one of the nine, who ride now upon winged steeds. Soon their terror will overshadow the last armies of our friends, cutting off the sun. But they have not yet been allowed to cross the river, and Saruman doesn't know of this new shape in which the ringwraiths have been clad. His thought is ever on the ring. Was it present in the battle? Was it found? What if Theoden, Lord of the Mark, should come by it and learn of its power? That's the danger that he sees, and he has fled back to Isengard to double and treble his assault on Rohan. And all the time there is another danger, close at hand, which he doesn't see. Busy with his fiery thoughts, he has forgotten Treebeard.
"Now you speak to yourself again," said Aragorn with a smile. "Treebeard is not known to me, and I have guessed part of Saruman's double treachery. Yet I don't see in what way the coming of two hobbits to Fangorn has served, save to give us a long and fruitless chase."
"Wait a minute," cried Gimli. "There's another thing that I should like to know first. Was it you, Gandalf, or Saruman that we saw last night?"
"You certainly didn't see me," answered Gandalf. "Therefore I must guess that you saw Saruman."
"Evidently we look so much alike that your desire to make an incurable dent in my hat must be excused." "Good, good," said Gimli. "I'm glad that it wasn't you."
Gandalf laughed again.
"Yes, my good dwarf," he said. "It's a comfort not to be mistaken at all points. Do I not know it only too well? But of course, I never blamed you for your welcome of me. How could I do so, who've so often counselled my friends to suspect even their own hands when dealing with the enemy? Bless you, Gimli, son of Gloin. Maybe you will see us both together one day and judge between us."
"But the hobbits," Legolas broke in. "We've come far to seek them, and you seem to know where they are. Where are they now?"
"With Treebeard and the Ents," said Gandalf.
"The Ents!" exclaimed Aragorn. "Then there's truth in the old legends about the dwellers in the deep forests and the giant shepherds of the trees? Are there still Ents in the world? I thought they were only a memory of ancient days, if indeed they were ever more than a legend of Rohan."
"A legend of Rohan!" cried Legolas. "Nay, every elf in Wilderland has sung songs of the old on Odrim and their long sorrow. Yet even among us they're only a memory. If I were to meet one still walking in this world, then indeed I should feel young again. But Treebeard? That is only a rendering of Fangorn into the common speech. Yet you seem to speak of a person. Who is this Treebeard?"
"Ah, now you are asking much," said Gandalf. "The little that I know of his long, slow story would make a tale for which we have no time now. Treebeard is Fangorn, the guardian of the forest. He is the oldest of the Ents, the oldest living thing that still walks beneath the sun upon this middle earth. I hope indeed, Legolas, that you may yet meet him. Merry and Pippin have been fortunate. They met him here, even where we sit. For he came here 2 days ago and bore them away to his dwelling far off by the roots of the mountains. He often comes here, especially when his mind is uneasy, and rumours of the world outside trouble him. I saw him 4 days ago striding among the trees, and I think he saw me, for he paused. But I didn't speak, for I was heavy with thought, and weary after my struggle with the Eye of Mordor. And he didn't speak either, nor call my name." "Perhaps he also thought that you were Saruman," said Gimli. "But you speak of him as if he was a friend. I thought Fangorn was dangerous."
"Dangerous?" cried Gandalf.
"And so am I, very dangerous, more dangerous than anything you will ever meet, unless you are brought alive before the seat of the Dark Lord. And Aragorn is dangerous, and Legolas is dangerous. You are beset with dangers, Gimli, son of Gloin, for you are dangerous yourself, in your own fashion. Certainly the forest of Fangorn is perilous, not least to those that are too ready with their axes, and Fangorn himself, he is perilous too, yet he is wise and kindly nonetheless. But now his long, slow wrath is brimming over, and all the forest is filled with it. The coming of the hobbits and the tidings that they have brought have spilled it. It will soon be running like a flood, but its tide is turned against Saruman and the axes of Isengard. A thing is about to happen which has not happened since the Elder Days. The Ents are going to wake up and find that they are strong."
"What will they do?" asked Legolas in astonishment.
"I don't know," said Gandalf. "I don't think they know themselves. I wonder—"
He fell silent, his head bowed in thought. The others looked at him. A gleam of sun through fleeting clouds fell on his hands, which lay now upturned on his lap. They seemed to be filled with light as a cup is with water. At last he looked up and gazed straight at the sun.
"The morning is wearing away," he said. Soon we must go.
Do you go to find our friends and to see Treebeard? Asked Aragorn.
No, said Gandalf. That's not the road that you must take. I've spoken words of hope, but only of hope. Hope is not victory. War is upon us and all our friends, a war in which only the use of the ring could give us surety of victory. It fills me with great sorrow and great fear, for much shall be destroyed and all may be lost. I am Gandalf, Gandalf the White, but black is mightier still.
He rose and gazed out eastward, shading his eyes, as if he saw things far away that none of them could see. Then he shook his head.
No, he said in a soft voice. It has gone beyond our reach. Of that, at least, let us be glad. We can no longer be tempted to use the ring. We must go down to face a peril near despair, yet that deadly peril is removed.
He turned.
Come, Aragorn, son of Arathorn, he said. Don't regret your choice in the valley of the Emynweald, nor call it a vain pursuit. You chose, amid doubts, the path that seemed right. The choice was just, and it has been rewarded. For so we have met in time, who otherwise might have met too late. But the quest of your companions is over. Your next journey is marked by your given word. You must go to Edoras and seek out Theoden in his hall, for you are needed. The light of Anduril must now be uncovered in the battle for which it has so long waited. There is war in Rohan, and worse evil. It goes ill with Theoden.
Then are we not to see the merry young hobbits again? Said Legolas.
I didn't say so, said Gandalf. Who knows? Have patience. Go where you must go, and hope. To Edoras I go thither also.
It is a long way for a man to walk, young or old, said Aragorn. I fear the battle will be over long ere I come there.
We shall see, said Gandalf. Will you come now with me?
Yes, we'll set out together, said Aragorn. But I don't doubt that you'll come there before me, if you wish.
He rose and looked long at Gandalf. The others gazed at them in silence as they stood there facing one another. The grey figure of the man, Aragorn, son of Arathorn, was tall and stern as stone, his hand upon the hilt of his sword. He looked as if some king out of the mists of the sea had stepped upon the shores of lesser men. Before him stooped the old figure, white, shining now as if with some light kindled within, bent, laden with years, but holding a power beyond the strength of kings.
"Do I not say truly, Gandalf?" said Aragorn at last, "that you could go whithersoever you wished quicker than I. And this I also say, you are our captain and our banner. The Dark Lord has nine, but we have one mightier than they, the White Rider. He has passed through the fire and the abyss, and they shall fear him. We'll go where he leads."
"Yes, together we will follow you," said Legolas.
"But first it would ease my heart, Gandalf, to hear what befell you in Moria. Will you not tell us? Can you not stay even to tell your friends how you were delivered?"
"I've stayed already too long," answered Gandalf. "Time is short. But if there were a year to spend, I wouldn't tell you all."
"Then tell us what you will and time allows," said Gimli. "Come, Gandalf, tell us how you fared with the Balrog."
"Name him not," said Gandalf,
and for a moment it seemed that a cloud of pain passed over his face, and he sat silent, looking old as death.
"Long time I fell," he said at last,
slowly, as if thinking back with difficulty.
"Long I fell, and he fell with me. His fire was about me. I was burned. Then we plunged into the deep water, and all was dark. Cold it was as the tide of death. Almost it froze my heart. Deep is the abyss that is spanned by Durin's bridge, and none has measured it," said Gimli. "Yet it has a bottom, beyond light and knowledge," said Gandalf. "Thither I came at last, to the uttermost foundations of stone. He was with me still. His fire was quenched, but now he was a thing of slime, stronger than a strangling snake. We fought far under the living earth, where time is not counted. Ever he clutched me, and ever I hewed him, till at last he fled into dark tunnels. They were not made by Durin's folk, Gimli son of Gloin. Far, far below the deepest delvings of the dwarves, the world is gnawed by nameless things. Even Sauron knows them not. They are older than he. Now I have walked there, but I will bring no report to darken the light of day. In that despair my enemy was my only hope, and I pursued him, clutching at his heel. Thus he brought me back at last, to the secret ways of Khazad-dûm. Too well he knew them all. Ever up now we went, until we came to the endless stair. Long has that been lost, said Gimli. Many have said that it was never made, save in legend, but others say that it was destroyed. It was made, and it had not been destroyed, said Gandalf. From the lowest dungeon to the highest peak it climbed, ascending an unbroken spiral in many thousand steps, until it issued at last in Durin's tower, carved in the living rock of Zirag-Zigil, the pinnacle of the Silvertine. There upon Celebdil was a lonely window in the snow, and before it lay a narrow space, a dizzy eyrie above the mists of the world. The sun shot fiercely there, but all below was wrapped in cloud. Out he sprang, and ever as I came behind, he burst into flame. There was none to see, or perhaps in after ages songs would still be sung of the Battle of the Peak. Suddenly Gandalf laughed. But what would they say in song? Those that looked up from afar thought that the mountain was crowned with storm. Thunder they heard, and lightning, they said, smote upon Celebdil, and leaped back, broken into tongues of fire. Is that not enough? A great smoke rose about us, vapor and steam. Ice fell like rain. I threw down my enemy, and he fell from the high place, and broke the mountainside where he smote it in his ruin. Then darkness took me, and I strayed out of thought and time, and I wandered far on roads that I will not tell. Naked I was sent back for a brief time, until my task is done. And naked I lay upon the mountaintop. The tower behind was crumbled into dust. The window was gone. The ruined stair was choked with burned and broken stone. I was alone, forgotten, without escape upon the hard horn of the world. There I lay staring upward, while the stars wheeled over, and each day was as long as a life-age of the earth. Faint to my ears came the gathered rumour of all lands, the springing and the dying, the song of the weeping, and the slow everlasting groan of overburdened stone. And so at the last, Gwaihir the Windlord found me again, and he took me up and bore me away. "Ever am I fated to be your burden, friend at need," I said. "A burden you have been," he answered, "but not so now. Light as a swan's feather in my claw you are. The sun shines through you. Indeed, I do not think you need me any more. Were I to let you fall, you would float upon the wind." "Do not let me fall," I gasped, for I felt life in me again. "Bear me to Lothlorien." "That indeed is the command of the Lady Galadriel, who sent me to look for you," he answered. "Thus it was that I came to Carras Galathon, and found you but lately gone. I tarried there in the ageless time of that land, where days bring healing, not decay. Healing I found, and I was clothed in white. Counsel I gave, and counsel took. Thence by strange roads I came, and messages I bring to some of you. To Aragorn I was bidden to say this. Where now are the Dúnedain? Elisar, Elisar, why do thy kinsfolk wander afar? Near is the hour when the lost should come forth, and the grey company ride from the north. But dark is the path appointed for thee, the dead watch the road that leads to the sea. To Legolas she sent this word. Legolas, Greenleaf, long under tree, in joy thou hast lived. Beware of the sea,
If thou hearest the cry of the gull on the shore, thy heart shall then rest in the forest no more."
Gandalf fell silent and shut his eyes.
"Then she sent me no message?"
said Gimli, and bent his head. "Dark are her words," said Legolas, "and little do they mean to those that receive them."
"That is no comfort,"
said Gimli. "What then?" said Legolas.
"Would you have her speak openly to you of your death?" "Yes, if she had naught else to say." "What is that?"
said Gandalf, opening his eyes.
"Yes, I think I can guess what her words may mean. Your pardon, Gimli. I was pondering the messages once again. But indeed, she sent words to you, and neither dark nor sad. 'To Gimli, son of Gloin,' she said, 'give his lady's greeting. Lockbearer, wherever thou goest, my thought goes with thee, but have a care to lay thine axe to the right tree.'"
"In happy hour you've returned to us, Gandalf,"
cried the dwarf, capering as he sang loudly in the strange dwarf tongue.
"Come, come," he shouted, swinging his axe. "Since Gandalf's head is now sacred, let us find one that is right to cleave."
"That will not be far to seek,"
said Gandalf, rising from his seat.
"Come, we've spent all the time that's allowed to a meeting of parted friends. Now there is need of haste."
He wrapped himself again in his old, tattered cloak, and led the way. Following him they descended quickly from the high shelf, and made their way back through the forest, down the bank of the Entwash. They spoke no more words until they stood again upon the grass beyond the eaves of Fangorn. There was no sign of their horses to be seen. "They have not returned," said Legolas. "It will be a weary walk."
"I shall not walk. Time presses," said Gandalf.
Then, lifting up his head, he gave a long whistle. So clear and piercing was the note that the others stood amazed to hear such a sound come from those old bearded lips. 3 times he whistled, and then, faint and far off, it seemed to them that they heard the whinny of a horse borne up from the plains upon the eastern wind. They waited, wondering. Before long there came the sound of hooves, at first hardly more than a tremor of the ground perceptible only to Aragorn as he lay upon the grass, then growing steadily louder and clearer to a quick beat.
"There is more than one horse coming," said Aragorn.
"Certainly," said Gandalf. "We are too great a burden for one."
"There are 3, said Legolas, gazing out over the plain. "See how they run. There is Hazafel, and there is my friend, Arod, beside him. But there is another that strides ahead, a very great horse. I have not seen his like before."
"Nor will you again," said Gandalf. "That is Shadowfax. He is the chief of the Maiaras, lords of horses, and not even Theoden, king of Rohan, has ever looked on a better. Does he not shine like silver, and run as smoothly as a swift stream? He has come for me, the horse of the White Rider. We are going to battle together."
Even as the old wizard spoke, the great horse came striding up the slope towards them. His coat was glistening, and his mane flowing in the wind of his speed. The 2 others followed, now far behind. As soon as Shadowfax saw Gandalf, he checked his pace and whinnied loudly. Then, trotting gently forward, he stooped his proud head and nuzzled his great nostrils under the old man's neck. Gandalf caressed him.
"It's a long way from Rivendell, my friend," he said, "but you are wise and swift and come at need. Far let us ride now together, and part not in this world again."
Soon the other horses came up and stood quietly by, as if awaiting orders.
"We go at once to Meadowseld, the hall of your master Theoden," said Gandalf, addressing them gravely. They bowed their heads.
"Time presses, so with your leave, my friends, we will ride. We beg you to use all the speed that you can. Hazafel shall bear Aragorn and Arod Legolas. I will set Gimli before me, and by his leave Shadowfax shall bear us both. We will wait now only to drink a little."
"Now I understand a part of last night's riddle," said Legolas, as he sprang lightly upon Arod's back. "Whether they fled at first in fear or not, our horses met Shadowfax, their chieftain, and greeted him with joy.
Did you know that he was at hand, Gandalf?
Yes, I knew, said the wizard. I bent my thought upon him, bidding him to make haste. For yesterday he was far away in the south of this land. Swiftly may he bear me back again.
Gandalf spoke now to Shadowfax, and the horse set off at a good pace, but yet not beyond the measure of the others. After a little while he turned suddenly, and choosing a place where the banks were lower, he waded the river, and then led them away due south into a flat land, treeless and wide. The wind went like grey waves through the endless miles of grass. There was no sign of road or track, but Shadowfax did not stay or falter.
"He's steering a straight course now for the hills of Theoden, under the slopes of the White Mountains," said Gandalf. "It will be quicker so. The ground is firmer in the East Emnet, where the chief northward track lies, across the river, but Shadowfax knows the way through every fen and hollow."
For many hours they rode on through the meads and riverlands. Often the grass was so high that it reached above the knees of the riders, and their steeds seemed to be swimming in a grey-green sea. They came upon many hidden pools and broad acres of sedge waving above wet and treacherous bogs. But Shadowfax found the way, and the other horses followed in his swath. Slowly the sun fell from the sky down into the west. Looking out over the great plain, far away the riders saw it for a moment like a red fire sinking into the grass. Low upon the edge of sight, shoulders of the mountains glinted red upon either side. A smoke seemed to rise up and darken the sun's disk to the hue of blood, as if it had kindled the grass as it passed down under the rim of earth.
"There lies the gap of Rohan," said Gandalf. "It is now almost due west of us. That way lies Isengard."
"I see a great smoke," said Legolas. "What may that be?"
"Battle and war," said Gandalf. "Ride on."
Chapter 6 The King of the Golden Hall. They rode on through sunset and slow dusk and gathering night. When at last they halted and dismounted, even Aragorn was stiff and weary. Gandalf only allowed them a few hours' rest. Legolas and Gimli slept, and Aragorn lay flat, stretched upon his back, but Gandalf stood, leaning on his staff, gazing into the darkness east and west. All was silent, and there was no sign or sound of living thing. The night was barred with long clouds, fleeting on a chill wind, when they arose again. Under the cold moon they went on once more, as swift as by the light of day. Hours passed, and still they rode on. Gimli nodded and would have fallen from his seat, if Gandalf had not clutched and shaken him. Hazufel and Arod, weary but proud, followed their tireless leader, a grey shadow before them hardly to be seen. The miles went by. The waxing moon sank into the cloudy west. A bitter chill came into the air. Slowly in the east, the dark faded to a cold grey. Red shafts of light leapt above the black walls of the Emyn Muil, far away upon their left. Dawn came clear and bright. A wind swept across their path, rushing through the bent grasses. Suddenly Shadowfax stood still and neighed. Gandalf pointed ahead. "Look!" he cried, and they lifted their tired eyes. Before them stood the mountains of the south, white-tipped and streaked with black. The grasslands rolled against the hills that clustered at their feet, and flowed up into many valleys still dim and dark, untouched by the light of dawn, winding their way into the heart of the great mountains. Immediately before the travellers, the widest of these glens opened like a long gulf amid the hills. Far inward they glimpsed a tumbled mountain mass with one tall peak. At the mouth of the vale there stood like a sentinel a lonely height. About its feet there flowed, as a thread of silver, the stream that issued from the dale. Upon its brow they caught, still far away, a glint in the rising sun, a glimmer of gold.
"Speak, Legolas," said Gandalf. "Tell us what you see there before us."
Legolas gazed ahead, shading his eyes from the level shafts of the new-risen sun. "I see a white stream that comes down from the snows," he said. Where it issues from the shadow of the vale, a green hill rises upon the east. A dyke and mighty wall and thorny fence encircle it. Within there rise the roofs of houses, and in the midst, set upon a green terrace, there stands aloft a great hall of men. And it seems to my eyes that it is thatched with gold. The light of it shines far over the land. Golden, too, are the posts of its doors. There men in bright mail stand, but all else within the courts are yet asleep.
Edoras those courts are called,
said Gandalf,
and Meduseld is that golden hall. There dwells Theoden, son of Thingol, king of the Mark of Rohan. We are come with the rising of the day. Now the road lies plain to see before us. But we must ride more warily, for war is abroad, and the Rohirrim, the horse lords, do not sleep, even if it seem so from afar. Draw no weapon, speak no haughty word, I counsel you all, until we are come before Theoden's seat.
The morning was bright and clear about them, and birds were singing when the travellers came to the stream. It ran down swiftly into the plain, and beyond the feet of the hills, turned across their path in a wide bend, flowing away east to feed the Entwash far off in its reed-choked beds. The land was green. In the wet meads and along the grassy borders of the stream grew many willow trees. Already in this southern land they were blushing red at their fingertips, feeling the approach of spring. Over the stream there was a ford between low banks much trampled by the passage of horses. The travellers passed over and came upon a wide rutted track leading towards the uplands. At the foot of the walled hill the way ran under the shadow of many mounds, high and green. Upon their western sides the grass was white as with a drifted snow. Small flowers sprang there like countless stars amid the turf.
"Look," said Gandalf, "how fair are the bright eyes in the grass! Ever mind they are called, Simbelmune, in this land of men, for they blossom in all the seasons of the year, and grow where dead men rest. Behold, we are come to the great barrows where the sires of Theoden sleep."
"Seven mounds upon the left, and nine upon the right," said Aragorn.
"Many long lives of men it is since the golden hall was built."
500 times have the red leaves fallen in Mirkwood in my home since then," said Legolas, "and but a little while does that seem to us."
"But to the riders of the Mark it seems so long ago,"
said Aragorn, "that the raising of this house is but a memory of song, and the years before are lost in the mist of time. Now they call this land their home, their own, and their speech is sundered from their northern kin." Then he began to chant softly in a slow tongue unknown to the elf and dwarf, yet they listened, for there was a strong music in it. "That, I guess, is the language of the Rohirrim," said Legolas, "for it is like to this land itself, rich and rolling in part, and else hard and stern as the mountains. But I cannot guess what it means, save that it is laden with the sadness of mortal speech."
"It runs thus in the common speech," said Aragorn, "as near as I can make it. Where now the horse and the rider? Where is the horn that was blowing? Where is the helm and the hauberk, and the bright hair flowing? Where is the hand on the harp-string, and the red fire glowing? Where is the spring and the harvest, and the tall corn growing? They have passed like rain on the mountain, like a wind in the meadow. The days have gone down in the west, behind the hills into shadow. Who shall gather the smoke of the dead wood burning, or behold the flowing years from the sea returning?" Thus spoke a forgotten poet long ago in Rohan, recalling how tall and fair was Eorl the Young, who rode down out of the north, and there were wings upon the feet of his steed. Fellarof, father of horses, so men still sing in the evening. With these words the travellers passed the silent mounds. Following the winding way up the green shoulders of the hills, they came at last to the wide wind-swept walls at the gates of Edoras. There sat many men in bright mail, who sprang at once to their feet and barred the way with spears. "Stay, strangers here unknown,"
they cried in the tongue of the Riddermark, demanding the names and errand of the strangers. Wonder was in their eyes, but little friendliness,